The year was 2004, and Tina Moore was out of town at a training seminar.
And I was in a strange hotel, and I was breaking out in hives, and I thought it was because of the detergent.
Tina thought she was reacting to whatever they were using to wash the sheets at the hotel.
And I figured, well, no big deal. When I get back home, I'll be my own detergent.
But when Tina returned home from training, the hives didn't go away.
And they got worse and worse. And the little hives turned into bigger hives, and then the bigger hives turned into, they just merged together to where I looked like I was one big hive. And it actually looked like somebody threw a bucket of scalding water on me, and I was just totally scalded all over my body.
The hives and the swelling went on for about 6 months and eventually became anaphylaxis. She went to the doctor who prescribed steroids, but she thought it was just treating the symptoms, not the cause.
I finally got upset with the doctor and I said, you know, these steroids are really bad because I don't really like taking a lot of medicines. I said, you need to find out what the answer is to my problem.
Tina went to an allergy specialist. That doctor eventually narrowed her reaction down to beef, pork, lamb, basically mammal meat. Her doctors couldn't put a name to her condition, so they just called it a red meat allergy. But it confused Tina. She never had any problems eating meat before. A few years passed, and she started posting in food allergy message boards.
And I was on People's Pharmacy, and somebody said, sent me just a one-liner, says, I bet you got bit by a tick. And I answered him, don't be absurd. Ticks do not cause food allergies.
But the respondent followed up with a study from the University of Virginia describing a condition called alpha-gal, an allergy to red meat caused by a bite from the Lone Star tick.
I was like, holy smokes, I can't believe it. This is exactly what I got.
And she went and got tested for the disease. It came back positive. Suddenly, everything clicked.
I remember getting a tick bite. I remember getting a lot of tick bites. And I work outside.
Tina lives on a farm in Frankfort, Delaware, where she raises horses. So getting a tick bite wasn't uncommon, but she remembered getting a strangely aggressive bite.
The tick got on me, and then where he bit, it was swollen, it was really red, it was lasted for months. It did not heal.
Tina had actually tried to get treated for Lyme disease after getting this bite, but a Lyme disease bite is supposed to look more like a bullseye.
And mine actually looked more like a yin and a yang. It was really weird.
And another weird thing, Tina's lived in Delaware since the 1970s, and in the many years she's lived here and gotten bit by ticks, she's never seen this particular tick species.
Used to be the deer tick was the big tick problem that we had. I never heard of a Lone Star tick before.
The little brown Lone Star ticks are known to be concentrated in areas like Texas and Oklahoma, but recent studies and news reports show that Lone Star ticks are becoming more present in places they haven't been before, like New England, parts of the Midwest, and even eastern provinces of Canada.
The million-dollar question is why? Why is that happening? I think the data are very clear it is happening.
This is Keith Clay, a biologist at Indiana University. He's been working with ticks since the late 1990s.
Back then, it was quite rare. We found them, but only in certain areas and only infrequently to find Lone Star ticks. And now they're by far and away the most common and abundant tick, and they're moving northwards.
Clay says Lone Star ticks like humidity, fragmented forests, and shrubby areas. And in southern Indiana and other parts of the Midwest, Clay says those are the same places they've seen a surge in deer populations.
In Indiana, the deer populations have really skyrocketed over the past 10 or 20 years as well. Kind of in parallel with Lone Star ticks.
And the kind of deer they really like are white-tailed deer. Holly Gaff, a tick researcher at Old Dominion University in Virginia, says that urban development has led to fragmented forests and disturbed areas, landscapes that Lone Star ticks really like. And we've also gotten rid of a lot of deer predators, so more food for the ticks.
We have created kind of a place where they can survive by manipulating the world around us.
Tina Moore also wondered if bird populations had anything to do with the rise in tick populations.
I remember when I was little, used to be able to sit out in the backyard and call Bob White. Now you can't, there's none around.
Bobwhites are a species of quail. They're ground foragers, so they eat little bugs they can pick off the ground, like ticks. But since they've disappeared over the years, Tina wanted to know if these missing predators had anything to do with the rise in ticks.
So birds do move some species of ticks, but they would not move the Lone Star tick.
Ticks are more influenced by the movement of their food source than they are by predators.
Lone Star ticks really like very large animals. They will feed on deer, they feed on humans, they feed on coyotes if you have them.
So as deer expand their range, so do Lone Star ticks. Both scientists agree that climate change could also encourage the Lone Star ticks to travel further north. But Gaff says that the Lone Star tick is traveling too quickly to be explained by climate change alone.
If it was just a result of climate change, I could see it moving very slowly northwards.
Gaff is referring to the fact that temperatures have been rising at a slow rate in Long Island, Cape Cod, places that have come to regard the Lone Star tick as a major pest. And the growth of their geographic range doesn't reflect the pace of rising temperatures.
That hasn't tipped the balance as much as the changes in the host populations.
DENRIC currently doesn't keep track of tick populations in the first state. The only measure of tick activity are the cases of tick-borne illnesses reported to the Division of Public Health. Neither DPH nor the CDC tracks alpha-gal since it's not considered an infectious disease. So it's unknown at the moment how many Lone Star ticks are in Delaware, and if Delaware might expect more cases of Lone Star tick-related conditions, like alpha-gal. It actually took Tina Moore 7 years to discover that she had alpha-gal, and when she did, she felt like her doctor didn't care.
My doctor had no information for me. Nothing. He had nothing. Nothing to offer, nothing to share. Nothing. And I thought to myself, you know, that's terrible. I just went through all this stuff and just got diagnosed, and now I'm just shoved away and with nothing. And I'm thinking to myself, I cannot be the only one out here with this. And so that's when I started the support group.
She set up the support group for alpha-gal victims on Facebook. She also told as many people as she could.
It's amazing. I have a cousin right down the road, 4 doors down. His coworker's wife has it too. And then I tell all my customers that I go to, and it's usually majority of them, probably almost 50%. Oh, I know someone who has that.
The Facebook group now contains close to 2,000 people, but not all of them have alpha-gal. Some of them are family members seeking advice, and though most of them are located in the U.S., there are some from other continents where alpha-gal is caused by different tick species. In the beginning, alpha-gal was tough on Tina, but over the years, she's learned to deal with her dietary restrictions.
I've never looked at it as all that terrible because I eat so much healthier.
But knowing that her allergy was caused by a single tick bite has definitely made her more cautious about where she ventures outdoors. For Delaware Public Media, I'm Eli Chen.